Here we are, sitting at the breakfast table of the University of Healing, and we're enjoying a lovely breakfast, enjoying a lovely sharing time, and we are enjoying immutable rules. And one rule is that we have our cutlery, contrary to what we normally have it, we have it upside down. And our habit is to put it right side up when we're eating with it, and putting it down right side up when we're eating with it, because it's our habit. Now, we want to be able to not be possessed by habits. Habits are beneficial to us and non-beneficial to us. It's a bad habit to pick your nose, and it's a good habit not to pick your nose, so to speak. But the thing is, what sort of beneficial habits do you want to develop in your world? Now, at the table this morning, Ingeborg was having a great problem. She could not find a hole on the Lazy Susan to put the package of jellies. And she searched everywhere for this, and she searched everywhere. And all the mothers and fathers at the table here were eagerly wanting to help her and eagerly wanting to reach out and show her where she could put them. And finally, one mother, with a great deal of irritation, grabbed the jellies and shoved them into a big open area, and with a sort of a humph, said, "See, that's where they belong." Now, Ellen is giving me a look on her face as much as to say, "I didn't see that." And perhaps Heinz didn't see it. Perhaps Irene didn't see it. Now, I know Rex didn't see it, because Rex never is disturbed by anything. If he can get food, he's happy. Now, I'm aware of everything, and so therefore, I see these things. Now, one of the habits that we have, and that habit is a tough habit, is being mama, being daddy, is being my brother's keeper. And as long as I'm my brother's keeper, I might as well roll up my tent and forget it. The sooner I die, the sooner this miserable mess is over with. As long as I'm my brother's keeper, we have people coming to the University of Healing and to the ministry here saying, "I'm going to help people. I'm going to help them. I'm going to show them the way to be good Christians. I'm going to show them the way to be good spiritually illumined beings. I'm going to show them the way." And I say to these people, I say, "What way are you going to show them?" "Well, I'm going to show." "Well, what way are you going to show?" "Well, I'm going to." "Well, what way?" "Well, that's what I'm going to learn when I'm taking your courses." You know? And I said, "Well, our courses will teach you that you do it for yourself. You don't show anybody else. You live it. And as a living example, if anyone wants to follow your example, great. If you are a role model of quality, people will say, 'I like that role model of quality.' If you're a role model of disgust, they will say, 'I don't really want to be around that person. I don't really want to walk that path.'" You know, and think about it. Just think about it. When will we learn to put our knives and forks correctly on the table, which is upside down? When will we learn to do it so habitually that we will do it just unconsciously? It'll be a habit, and then we'll change it again. But when will it be a habit? When it becomes a habit, that will show you how quickly you learn new programs for yourself, how quickly you can learn to program yourself. This is immaterial, what we do with our knives and forks. Use your hands, you know, use your feet, whatever, you know. There was a little video that was sent the other day of this woman, and she didn't have any arms, and she had to take care of her baby herself and feed her baby and change her baby's diapers without any arms. A most amazing woman. And she would take the baby in her feet and hold the baby and snuggle the baby and love the baby, and she'd put the baby's clothing on and take the baby's clothing off. She'd change it and wipe its bottom and so forth and clean it up. And it was a magnificent expression of the impossible being quite normal for her. She was very ambidextrous with these things here, but she trained herself to do it. Now, people said, "Well, we should get you arms, you know, so that you can do the things." Oh, okay, but that's not important. She does everything without it. She drives her car. She sits in her car and drives with her feet. You know, Amazing lady, I tell you, a really amazing lady. We have a little clip on it here. You might like to see it later. But it's just a very wonderful expression of how she learned new habits for herself. And in learning new habits, she expressed these new things. Now, did she have any motivation? Mm-hmm. Now, the motivation was, number one, she got married. Her husband dearly loved her. The man thought she was just great, arms or no arms. He just loved this woman. This woman had a charisma, a personality. She was a people. She liked herself. She didn't feel sorry for herself. Oh, dear me, I'm without, you know. She had no attitude about that at all. She just loved herself and was very self-confident in herself. And it's beautiful. My dog slobbers all over my hands in my chair here. But she just loved herself. And when she got married and they had sex, can you imagine having sex with an armless woman? Well, yes. He had a relationship with his wife and had this lovely child. The child's whole and perfect, no problem. And then she wanted to, from the very beginning, take care of the child. And everybody said, oh, no, no, we got to get help for you. You can't do that. You can't. I can. And she did, and she does. And she has a good personality. She doesn't feel that she's put upon. She even cooks her own meals. She takes care of the dinner. She sets the table. She does everything with just feet. Now, you tell me how you would feel if you didn't have any legs and you had to go around with a wheelchair doing this here. You say, oh, dear me, oh, sad me, you know. Well, here she has no arms, and she goes around and sets the table and does these things. What an amazing lady. And the big thing is she has a good attitude about herself. She likes herself. She thinks that she's just a lovely being, and she is a lovely being. And everybody who knows her loves her. And her lady friends sometimes come over in an afternoon. They'll have a cup of coffee together, and she'll serve the coffee. And her guests don't think anything about being served with people with their feet. You know, she has to keep her feet washed more often than normally, but before she plays with the baby or does something to the baby, she got to wash her feet, you know. But that's where she is. Those are her hands. How many times do you wash your hands before you play with the baby? Ha, ha, ha. Or before you serve your company? You go in the kitchen, you come out, you go to the bathroom, you come out, you do this, you go golf. And how often do you do it? Yeah. How often do you do it? They had a little quip. It says, eighth grade girl won a contest on proving that public telephones had more bacteria on them than toilets. You know? How interesting. Public telephones had more bacteria on them than telephones. I mean, public telephones had more bacteria than toilets. Now, that's quite interesting. We are so concerned about washing our hands after we go in the bathroom, doing this and doing that and doing the other thing. And really, it is a good idea. But the thing is, when you get right down to it, what is it all about? What is it all about? It's all up here. It's all up here. Your children are supposed to eat a peck of what before they die? A peck of dirt. You're supposed to eat a peck of dirt before you die. This is a truism. It's a sprick word, you know. And that's a big old bushel like this of dirt. And do kids do that? You bet they do. My gosh, they're shoveling it in. And they're eating the dirt, and they're eating the paint off their cribs, and they do all sorts of neat things, you know. And some die because of the zinc in there and what have you, and some don't. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. Now, what's this got to do with attitudes and habits?
Voila.
A lot. When you have the right attitude about yourself, you don't care. I told Ellen this morning, Ellen says, if I go to the house and I tell them that we want to eat on the porch, they're going to say, that's Herb telling you to do that. And then Herb is telling you what to do. You're damn right. You're damn right. Ellen said that you hadn't set the breakfast table on the porch. I said, set it on the porch. And she says, but they didn't want to do it. As a group, they said they wouldn't do it. I said, well, who's running the show here? I said, me or you or them? And Ellen says, they are. They are. They're doing the work. And no, they aren't. If this table were not set for breakfast, I'd be out here eating alone. I don't care. This is where we have our breakfast and dinner. We built this beautiful pavilion here, this beautiful porch. We put on this beautiful carpet on here at no small expense, you know. And it wasn't a big expense, but no small expense. But the thing is, we put it on here, and we did a lot of beautiful things here. And then all we have, and then she hires Brian to come here, our handyman yesterday, and clean off the roof. I said, don't clean off the roof. Don't clean off the roof just before we're going to be eating out here and having a program. She said, well, I have to have it done because it bothers my mind that it's dirty up there. I said, okay, then make sure someone cleans the deck. Well, she didn't. The deck wasn't cleaned. And so all the dirt was down here, and I said, Ellen, we're eating on the deck. I'm eating out there. You can eat where you want. Now, you see, who are we going to let run our life? Are we going to follow the principles? You, Irene, when you sit behind the wheel of your car, who's driving?
I.
You are. Now, your mother says, oh, Irene, stop. Oh, Irene, go. Oh, Irene, do this. Oh, Irene, do that. You close your mother off, not because you don't have respect for her, but because you, as the captain or the pilot or the driver of the car, have to keep your attention on what you're doing. And if you don't keep your attention on what you're doing, you'll have a problem, right? Yes. So, there can only be one driver of the car. Now, someone might give you directions at the next turn, corner, turn right, you know, or left or whatever. But the thing is, there can only be one pilot, only one driver. And who's the pilot in control of an airplane, you know, and of a car or anything else? We have to be so definite. Now, when we have people in our world who feel they have to run the world or they have to tell us how the world should be run, you know what I say to them? I say, go find your own world. If anybody comes to the campus of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, Absolute Monastery, School of the Master, Worldwide Healing Ministry, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If they come here and they don't want to follow my program, then please go away. You're not welcome here. You are welcome here only if you follow my program to the letter. Boy, Herb, aren't you a bubba-doo? Yes. Ellen came here because she liked this program. And she liked it so much, I made her in charge of making sure the program is carried out. Heinz came here because he feels that this program is going to bring about some changed attitudes in his mind. But it's not going to bring about any changed attitudes in his mind if he holds on to his old attitudes, you know. And Sylvia came here because she wanted to have some new attitudes of mind. Now, Sylvia came here and she brought along a remnant of the past. She brought along a person in her life that she does not have any respect for. At least that's what she tells us. And this person calls her on the phone once, twice, three, four times a month, and doesn't get her. Sylvia doesn't talk to her. Sylvia says, no, we're eating, we're doing this, sorry, can't talk to you. And the person just calls back and calls back. And this person is not the type of person that Sylvia is. You understand that? But yet, Sylvia keeps creating her in her world. Sylvia keeps creating her calling back. Instead of just not being available at all, or telling her, look, I love you, I think you're wonderful, but you're not the kind of person that I am, and I don't want you in my world. So I don't want to be rude to you, but please stop calling me, you know? Or whatever. Now, we had a prisoner in prison who was got a little cocky, and he thought that he was pushing us around. He thought he was the boss. And so we told him, I'm sorry, you are blocked from sending any calls through to the university. So he couldn't make any calls. But neither could any of the other prisoners that have been in contact with us and have been working on their spiritual life with us. All of them lost out because this guy didn't mind his P's and Q's. Well, we had a respite for a while. It was no great problem. And after a time, he realized, he woke up. That and other things helped him to wake up. And he realized, hey, he cannot let other people push him around. He cannot let his mental attitude push him around. And he cannot push other people around. And so he stopped doing that. And when he stopped doing that, he started changing all areas of his life. All areas of his life. He started getting responsible jobs. He started getting responsible respect. He started working with students in the teacher training program that he was working in. He just totally did a turnaround on himself. And so then we released the lock so he could call us here. But we do not want on campus, I don't want on campus, and I don't want on campus, therefore it's me that doesn't want on campus. Now, if you are like this too, that's great. But I do not want on campus anything contrary to what we teach. And what we teach is that everyone is to be themselves and have fun. And if being yourself and have fun is running other people's lives, that we don't want. If being yourself and having fun is stealing or cheating or hurting another person, we don't want that on here. If being yourself and having fun is doing naughty things that the law doesn't allow and that society doesn't allow, and certainly your mommy and daddy wouldn't allow, we don't want that here. All we want on campus is to be yourself and have fun in the most wonderful, beautiful, sensitive, loving, caring ways. Unpossessed. Next.
Non-judgmental.
Non-judgmental.
Unemotional.
Unconditional
love. Unconditional love comes later.
Non-possessive.
One-pointed. Mm-hmm. All right. You see, once we are all those three aspects, then what happens? Then we are unconditionally loving. If we have any of those aspects out of line, we are not unconditionally loving. You want to be unconditionally loved. Oh, I'd love to be unconditionally loved. I'd love it. But oh boy, did you know what they did? Did you know what's going on to them? Hey, that's not unconditionally loving. Unconditionally loving is minding your own business. It's getting a nose job, you know. Unconditionally loving is having no possession. It doesn't matter. See, it doesn't matter. I mean, here, I can do all this stupid stuff like this. It doesn't really matter. See, nothing matters here. And you say, oh, Herb, what are you doing? You knocked all the stuff. Please. You knocked all the stuff off the lazy Susan. And this terrible Herb. Oh, my goodness. Hey, muck nix. What's that to you? Did I pour it in your lap? No. No, no problem, right? Did I pour it in your lap?
No.
But Mama, I want to pick it up right away. In my seminars, I throw a glass and go up in the room and people watch it full of water and it come down, crash in the middle of the seminar and they say, my God, he lost his cool. He's lost his marbles. And all the mamas will jump up and want to pick up the glass. I say, so, we have persons that come around and sweep these things up and take care of these things. Now, just relax. Now, can you sit quietly in your chair with that broken glass in the middle of the room and be untouched, not feel that you have to get up there and pick it up, not feel that it is an atrocity, not feel that it is something just so terrible, so terrible, so terrible, oh goodness gracious, you know, the world's going to come to an end because of the broken glass in the middle of the room. What do you think when you're at a dinner in a restaurant and all of a sudden from the kitchen you hear a clatter of 150 glasses falling off the table and breaking? What do you think? Your visualization is, my God, that's going to come off their check. Or that's going to do this, or that's going to do that. Right away you're judging. Can you hear the noise and say, all's in divine order, and go about your business? Can you hear that upsetting condition that tells you it? Can you hear a fire engine and not be disturbed? Can you hear a child crying and not be disturbed? What do you say?
Peace.
And all's in divine order. All's in divine order. Dodo, your friend, she is in the nursery with dozens of kids. And every child she picks up stops crying. And she can't pick them all up at once because she's got one at a time, you know. And so she looks over the room and, like Jesus, she says, peace. And that's her middle name. And she says, peace. And so on this roiling water of crying children, they all become peaceful. And then they all turn their heads toward her, even though some of them haven't opened their eyes yet, and some of them haven't even focused in on anything. And they turn their heads toward her, and they say, "I love you." And she says, "I love you too." And they're all quiet and peaceful. That's the master of your world. That's the master of your world. She knows when she goes into that nursery that she must be master of herself, because if she isn't, it'll be master of her. Screaming kids all day long, hollering kids, you know, crazy. You did it to yourself. Don't go in that job. If you go in that job, you say, peace. Peace. Our friend Endless in Nigeria, little 21-year-old boy, for 10 years or more, every time he'd see a crying child, he'd ask the mother, "May I pick up the child?" And the mother'd say, "Sure." Instantly, the child would stop crying. Instantly. No matter what, dirty pants or whatever, you know, the child would stop crying. He had that gift and has it yet. And he loves it. And he feels so special. But he's growing up now. He doesn't feel he's got to reach for every crying child. In fact, he doesn't have to create crying children in his life. He's now creating brilliant geniuses in his life, all learning computer that he's teaching them. You see, it all depends on where your name in the game is. You know, where is it? Where is it? And if you ever come here and you feel that my dramatics or my imagination is just a little too heavy for you, go home, or rethink it, and say, what difference does it make, you know? What difference does it make? You would have loved yesterday. You would have loved yesterday. Sylvie wasn't here, but it was noon, wasn't it? Yeah. Or was it dinner. Supper? Noon.
Dinner.
Dinner. Okay, at dinner. At dinner, this person served me a salt shaker that was full of big clogs in it. And we put rice in it, which should have kept it nice and broken, but it didn't. And I said, "That is terrible. Give me all these salt shakers." And so I took all the salt shakers and cleaned them all out thoroughly. I cleaned out all the old salt, the new salt, the good salt, the bad salt, and put it on a tray here. Then it got all over the table, of course. And then she said, "Well, try this sea salt." And so we put the sea salt in all of these containers, and they, as you know, see, they shake pretty good. You know, it's not bad. Nice salt. And so now we have that, and none of them are shook up. None of them have little clods in them. Maybe give it time, but I don't think so. I think that they've been healed. they're salt shakers without any problems. What do you think, Ingeborg?
You're right.
Yes. Salt shakers without any problem. And they're beautiful. But if you had seen the table as I was playing there and using my spoon to take it out of the salt shakers, the little salt shakers, and reach in there and scrape around and tap it out here and bring all that stuff out, Ellen was thinking to herself, "Oh, my God." And Heinz was sitting over there and saying, "Herb, you have more fun than anybody. Can I do it too?" And Ingeborg was sitting there, "Well, you want all the shakers? You want all of them? And that dish isn't large enough to hold all the salt, you know?" And so then, the funniest thing of all is Miss Practicality. Miss Practicality. Now, Sybil and her husband Sam in Nigeria live in a country that has potholes in their roads. Very serious potholes everywhere. Potholes. You know what potholes are? Okay, well, sometimes they're filled with water and you can't see them. And when you go pop in the pothole, sometimes the potholes are as big as a porch here, you know, and you go glug, 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 glug. Well, anyhow, Sam has become accustomed to buying used tires for his Mercedes because they get so beat up in the potholes. And it's not that Sam can't afford new tires and so forth, but he gets these beat-up tires, and they can't really go fast enough to do too much damage because every mile or two, they're stopped by the police who want to get a little handout. And so the policemen are standing there with their hands out saying, you know, where are you going? I'm going to town. And they give them some money and then they let you drive on. And they say, what you got there in the car? What you doing here? You know, if you don't give them money right away. And then they want to look in your trunk. They want to look here and bother you and slow you down. And, you know, pretty. That's why it takes so long to get so many places there. Mm-hmm. So, anyhow, I believe that there are manufacturers who manufacture tires with what's called steel belting in them. Really serious steel belting in them. And that steel belting is almost like a caterpillar tractor belting, you know. And I think that those are available for those Mercedes on which they could drive on those roads and their tires would never be disturbed, you know. Never be disturbed. And that's why I think it was so silly for us to buy tractor tires for our tractors that were just normal rubber. We should have bought steel-belted tractor tires that could drive over any type of brush and would crash the brush underneath it without, because we don't need it for a speedway vehicle. We just want it for going on any type of terrain. So, you see, this is called being able to change your habits, change your thinking, change your way of doing it. Now, Sam has been working so long with used tires for his Mercedes that he has, and he's so accustomed to doing it, he would probably feel it was over-indulgent to buy these special tires that could handle anything. But what do I say? I say, hey, do not limit yourself. Think wildly big. Now, Ellen?
Yes?
Sam lives amidst potholes. Now, Sam could do a number of things. He could speak his word and saying, all our roads are smooth and perfect. Mm-hmm. That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sam could speak his word and say, all of my ways are clear and open. Sam could speak his word and say, I have an air car. And my car rides above the ground, a foot or two, five, and over the marshes or over anything. I can even take my car out in the ocean and go fishing because it'll just be above the ocean, you know. And these cars exist. They exist. The military has them in profusion, and many private citizens have them too. And they cost a few dollars, but everything costs a few dollars nowadays. So Sam could have that, and he could just be so lovely. Sam takes me over to meet the kings there in Nigeria, and as we go to the king's house, the king walks out of his castle with us after the meeting, and then he says, well, Sam, you're going to start? And because he knows Sam's car sometimes doesn't want to start. Well, then the car didn't start. So Sam opens up the hood. And the king sticks his head under there, and Sam sticks his head under there. And Sam takes the hammer and goes, ding, 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 you know, cling, cling, you know how we do. And then it started. And he gets in there, and he's got it going. And he said, well, see you later. And he keeps the car running, you know. But you see, isn't it interesting? I'm not being unkind to Sam or anybody else, because this is what we all do. But why don't we wake up? Why don't we wake up? Why don't we wake up and say, maybe Sam likes ducking down in the roads. I was with Sam on a number of trips, and several times he would have to stop because the tire was flat. And so he would just shanghai some person standing along the road and saying, come, change my tire. And the guy's standing there and is going to church school suit, you know, all dressed up, slick and beautiful. And the guy stops doing whatever he's doing and sets his books and Bible down and reaches in and takes the tire off and puts the tire in the trunk and puts the other tire on the car and closes the trunk and picks up his Bible and not one speck of dirt on his clothing. He's a master at doing that. And then Sam gives him a ride to where Sam is going. So that is his payment for doing that duty. Now, I think it's fascinating. Now, if he can command so much respect, if he can command so much control over his world, he can certainly command control over everything else too. Mm-hmm. We come up to a stop, not even a stop, we come up to a bunch of people in the middle of the road, you can't drive through them, and then you have to stop or run them over. And as you stop, they come around you with all of their boxes of bananas and all the different things they have for sale, and they want to sell these things. And so Sam usually buys bananas and then passes them around, and then we go on our way. But what a creation. What a master he is. What an absolute master. And Sybille, his wife, she sits in the back seat and sings our joy songs and pays no attention to what's going on in the world around her. She is oblivious to it and just having a good time. Now, could you be so one-pointed? Could you be so untouched? Could you be so unpossessed? Could you be so unjudgmental to live in the environment I told you about? If you could, then truly you would be unconditionally loving the way Sam and Sybille are. Unconditionally loving. You want to learn how to do it? Well, practice it in your own life, because their pattern, their life, their experiences will be different from yours. And your pattern, your life, and your experiences will be totally yours. So, Ingeborg, I missed a few things here. Don't help me, Ingeborg.
No,
don't help me. I'll shove a few more things off of here, you know. And I don't want to make a total mess for you. And this should always be said on the outside of the world. Why? Because the people want one, they can get to it.
Yeah.
You pick up the rabbit ears, the whole thing comes. But anyhow, this is our life. This is our life. This is our world. And how do you like my new recorder? Class, huh? Okay, kids. Ship up, shape out, shape out, shape up, ship out, whatever. But here, there is not a, how does that song go? Oh, give me a home where the buffaloes roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where never is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are all cloudy all day. So now remember that. Never is heard a discouraging word. And that's who you are. That's who I am, and that's what it's all about. I love you. I love you.
I love you.